still wants to say something.
Yes.
The call on the ice is no goal due to goaltender interference. Vegas is using a coach's challenge to challenge the call.
What the heck was that? Well, you have to explain this to me. I didn't catch this.
So there was a review that was for goaltender interference.
Right.
And they called the ice. I think they called the call on the ice was a goal.
Right.
The referees went to look at it.
Yep.
And after they had done looking at it, the one official comes out and he tries to make the announcement. And he said, you know, he started out with saying it the way he did.
Yeah.
Everybody thought it was a goal. Vegas reacted to it was a goal. Like, the goal horn goes off, and he's still standing there, waiting to say more. And then when he comes back on, he says, there's no goal because of goal interference.
I couldn't make out the first part. What was he saying that set off the goal horn, though?
So he said the puck was in the net. Hear that,
yeah,
and realize it's a goal.
Yeah.
But that's not the part of the explanation you need to hear.
No. Vegas must be new at this still. They're still new at it. So.
Yeah, goalie challenges.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Love it. It is, we've been talking some Sabres today. 803-0550, four-game losing streak. We're trying to figure out if you're concerned, worried, or still very confident. Could get a nice little three-game winning streak here going again. The next three games on this homestand, Flyers, Kings, Coyotes. We're also talking football because it's Football Friday, presented by Seneca Buffalo Creek Casino. Nothing else comes close. And brought to you by Tops Markets Grocery Delivery. Save $15 on your first order with promo code TOPSWGR. Earlier this morning, we were joined by Bills linebacker Lorenzo Alexander. He is having himself quite the season, leading the team in sacks. I don't have all the stats in front of me. He's fourth in tackles. I think he was tied for first or second with passes broken up and tackles for losses, having a great year at the age of 35 in the final year of a contract and playing like a guy who should be back next season. One of the things we talked about with Lorenzo when he was on with us earlier, his role in Sean McDermott's defense and how the coaches are using him and how it's creating the strong season that he's having.
Well, for me, it's just all about having the opportunity to be out on the field. I'm an old school football player. Just put me out there, find ball, get ball. But with the difference, I think each coaching staff obviously implements me 3-4 versus 4-3. So for me as a football player, just the lines of seeing the game are a lot different. When I was in Rex's defense, I was playing a lot more on the ball on the outside. And then last year, playing off the ball in a 4-3 system as a linebacker, just seeing how the game unfolds, seeing how plays unfold is a little different. So it's a little bit of a learning curve for me. And I'm still doing a lot of that. So I've gotten better just with all the reps. But then also I'm rushing more, have a lot more opportunity to get after the quarterback, going outside as well as playing inside. And it's just been really good. And obviously, you know, working with Kyle, working with Jerry, and now with Trent and Shaq on the outside, just having a really good chemistry going on.
I'm curious. I wasn't thinking about this, but now I want to ask you about Star, whichever way he pronounces his last name. And the impact he's had, like, you could look at Jerry Hughes, you could look at edge rushers, right? And say, well, look
right
at sacks and different things. For a defensive tackle, you know, it's a little bit harder. So as a guy who plays behind those guys,
right,
how much of an impact has Star had, do you think, on this defense this season?
I mean, immensely. I mean, you don't have guys climbing up, like you may have saw last year. I mean, he just takes up two guys every time, and if you decide you don't want to block him or you want to just chip real quick and climb to a linebacker, he's being very disruptive in the pocket, as well as on you know, first and second down passes as well, pushing the pocket, allowing guys like Jerry and Trent to be able to turn the corner, and the quarterback hasn't been able to step up as much. So he's been a star maker in a sense, you know, allowing other guys around him to raise their stats and their game and their impacts just by his presence and his effort and energy that he brings every single play.
I'm glad we had you on today, not only to talk about your game, but there are a couple other young guys, the linebackers. And I'd love to get your thoughts on both Tremaine Edmonds and Matt Milano. Let's start with Milano, because Lorenzo, this guy's turning out to be a steal for a mid-round pick, and he seems to be able to do whatever they ask of him defensively. Can you just talk a little bit about what you've seen from him and what stands out about Milano when you watch him? Well, maybe go back and look at tape because you're busy playing.
Right. I think Matt Milano is just a very athletic linebacker, instinctive as well. Obviously, he played safety in college, so that gives him the ability to cover. And then he's big enough to still come in the box and lay the lump, you know, when he needs to in the run game. And I think the biggest thing with Matt that I've seen from really last year where he was kind of in and out of the lineup to now where he's really solidified the spot is his confidence. And I think a lot of times that's what guys just need, to be able to ride that high and be okay with making some mistakes, because that's what holds most guys back, not be able to play free and just go out there and cut it loose because you're worried about getting cut, you're worried about the coach taking you out, you worry about giving up a big play. And he's really learned how to move past that and understanding football more. And that's why you're seeing his production really take off, because he's really understanding the game of football and out there just playing fast and not really worried about making the mistakes. And when he does, he's able to move on to the next play.
And the baby of the group, Tremaine Edmonds, who, I don't know. No, he couldn't be your son. You would have had to have
a kid.
You would have had to have a kid when you were 15. That's kind of young.
I know. Well, we all know there are people out there that have had
that's
children
true.
When they were 15.
That's
so,
true.
I mean, it is possible. And actually, I have my oldest daughter is 23, so it's actually 3 years older than him. She's my stepdaughter, but I still have a daughter that's 23. So,
okay. So tell me about your boy there, Tremaine Edmonds.
Yeah, I like to think of him as my nephew. That's a little bit more cooler than my son. But he is an elite talent, a monster, and I've said this since day one. As long as he stays healthy, he is going to be an all-pro and really be the standard, because you don't see guys that big and long and athletic these days. So, you know, he's a one-in-a-million type of player. And what's really going to set him aside from everybody else is not his talent, because everybody has talent. It's his mentality and his foundation and the way he approaches the game. He's hungry. He doesn't feel entitled. He works hard. And he's done a great job of playing Mike linebacker, which he's never done in his life. And now you put him in as the quarterback of the defense, and he's excelled. And I even think with all that on his way, he's played a little slower, so he still has a lot more athleticism and playmaking ability left in him. And I think next year you'll start seeing that jump like you saw with Matt, because now he'll come in with a year under his belt. He understands what is being asked of him. He understands the defense. And then he'll just be able to let it loose. But his parents, obviously being around his brothers who've also been in the NFL, they've done a great job with this young man. He is a breath of fresh air to be around when you kind of put him around a lot of the millennial, that kind of mindset. A group of young men that are coming out of college these days.
Lorenzo Alexander with us on our Westshore Hotline. Just got a couple more things for you. I'd love to get your opinions out on Josh Allen as well. And I was just saying earlier, Lorenzo, you know, the last two games, he looks like a different quarterback than the guy he was at the time he got hurt in Houston. He seems more confident. Obviously, he's running more. He just seems to exude a little bit more leadership in the offense. What are you seeing in terms of differences from him?
Yeah, well, leadership is it takes time and it's a process because you can't walk in here as a rookie. Even though, yeah, he's a quarterback and he's a starter, guys have to learn to trust and respect you even though you've been drafted high and kind of been given that mantle. So I think guys have learned who he is, respect his game. Obviously, thing with Josh is just the inconsistency of being in and out of the game because he didn't start the season, had that injury. But I think that's kind of helped him a little bit the second time around, because he played a little bit, got to sit back, kind of see his mistakes, maybe see the game after he's kind of been in there and kind of learned from obviously bringing in Derek Anderson and Matt Barkley. And now he's just out there just playing free, throwing the ball around and making plays and not second-guessing himself. And I thought we saw a glimpse of that even before he got hurt. So he's just going to continue to get better, continue to grow. Because the Dable's offense is complex. There's a lot of things to it. And I think we've cut things back to make the game faster to him. But as he grows, we'll be able to add more. And with that, you just become more productive on offense, because defenses can't just say, okay, they always do this or they always do that. And it's really going to help us in the future.
So you've taken pride, Lorenzo, over your time here in Buffalo and prior to playing here, about getting involved in the community. Yesterday, you were named as the Bills nominee for the Walter Payton Man of the Year Award. What did that mean to you?
I mean, it's a huge honor, obviously, because your teammates vote for you. This is the fourth time I've received this award. So it, more than anything, it just shows that I'm consistently doing the things that I say I want to do in life. And that's be a great leader on and off the field, be a light in serving people and helping those that are less fortunate. And, you know, just helping them try to find their way and doing my part, because I've been blessed with so much. And I recognize I had many, 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 many people in my life to do the same thing for me, to help me get to where I'm at. And I would be foolish if I didn't use the platform and resources that I have now to do the same for the next generation and people in this community and the community I'm from back in Oakland and as well as other cities that I played in.
Lorenzo, final thing for you. Your contract is up after this year. So do you have you started thinking about whether you want to play? Do you go to the Bills and say, I'd like to be back? Do they go to you? How will all of this work in terms of your football future?
We'll see what happens. I've definitely thought about do I want to play or not. Obviously, I've expressed that I would like to retire a Bill. I think the team would like me to be here as well. But I'll make that decision as far as playing or not after the season. It's always hard to make a decision like that. Right now, it's cold. You've been pounding your body for the last 4 months, and you're feeling sore. But I definitely think I have another year in the tank for me. But I'll talk to my wife, and we'll make a decision, and then hopefully me and the Bills can come to an agreement, and I can be able to retire here as a Buffalo Bill.
So here are the stats. He's fourth in tackles. He leads the team in sacks. He's tied for second in passes defensed and third in tackles for loss, and part of a really strong linebacking group for the first time here in a long time with Edmonds and Milano. So the Bills are playing the Jets on Sunday, and it's Allen versus Darnold, the matchup we wanted to see the first time, not Barkley versus McCown. Let's find out a little bit more about the Jets and specifically the return of Sam Darnold on our Wester hotline from ESPN.com is longtime Jets reporter Rich Cimini. Rich, it's Howard and Brayton. First of all, thanks for coming on with us this morning.
Yeah, great. Thanks for having me, guys.
Rich, Sam Darnold, let me start with, before we get to the return portion, the first nine games, okay? I watched his game against Detroit. I'd seen him a little bit earlier in the season, and then I kind of lost track of him. So, first nine games from Darnold, what did you see, generally speaking?
Well, he was 3-6, and he had three really good games. Those, not coincidentally, the games the Jets won. And he had a couple of really bad ones, a couple of clunkers toward the end before his injury was his worst game. He had four interceptions against Miami, and he was regressing at that point.
Yep.
It was almost getting to a point where you wondered if maybe they would sit him down to just collect himself a little bit on the sideline, but the foot injury took care of that, and now he's back. So it's been really a roller coaster. Like with Josh Allen, it's the same thing. It's, yep, you know, these rookies go through this process. And I think maybe the worst thing for Sam, in retrospect, as crazy as it sounds, that Detroit game where he played so well out of the box on Monday Night Football to start the season, I think it raised fans' expectations to an unrealistic level, and he hasn't been able to match that since.
You mentioned that he was regressing at the time he was injured. What were you seeing in terms of that regression? What were some of the problems you were seeing in his game?
Starting to forced some passes, which was the knock on him last year at USC. He led the nation in turnovers last year. And I think part of it was because he was trying to do too much. You know, he didn't have the same supporting cast at USC as he had the previous year when he was throwing to guys like Juju Smith-Schuster. So obviously a great receiver. And so you saw that when he was pressing recently with the Jets, throwing balls into coverage. Interesting stat I dug up with the help of Pro Football Focus. 10 of his 14 throwing against zone defenses have really been a problem for him. He's got only one touchdown pass and 10 interceptions against zone defenses. And obviously the Bills play a lot of zone, so that could be a problem for him on Sunday.
You know, you mentioned the similarities to Josh Allen for sure, because I think when Allen got hurt, I felt his game was going backwards a little bit. But also, you're talking about rookie quarterbacks, and I think what we've said about Josh Allen, you've probably said about Sam Darnold. What does he have around him on the offense? It's a difficult situation for a rookie to be in.
Yeah, they're very, very similar supporting casts. You know, they have, at least Buffalo's got a proven star. I know he hasn't had the same year as he, you know, with Shady, hasn't had the year that he usually has. But in terms of receiving core, I mean, the Bills have been just churning their receiving core over and over. They're getting rid of guys, you know, as the season goes. And the Jets' receiving core is just kind of average. You know, it is really, they have some okay receivers, Quincy Enunwa leading that group, but there's no dynamic playmaker. And, you know, and the Jets are poorly coached. I mean, their offensive coordinator, Jeremy Bates, is in over his head. And it's just, they're performing at historically bad levels. I could throw a million stats out, but I'll throw one out. The Jets have gone five straight games with one or zero touchdowns by the offense, and that is a franchise record. for five straight games. Now, I know the Bills went through a horrific stretch.
Same thing. So Bills, that's right.
Yeah, Bills fans are very much familiar with bad offense. So this might be an epically bad game on Sunday.
I've got to tell you, it's so funny. Reading all the stories in New York, yours and other guys in New York, it's everything we were saying about the Bills a little over a month ago. I mean, it's that bad that it's just such a struggle. And I think at some point, Rich, I think it happened here, maybe it's happening there. At some point, the defense begins to crack under the weight of having to carry the football team when you know you got to play a near-perfect game.
Oh, there's no question. I mean, you've seen it 1,000 times over the years. And, you know, when you're out on the field that much, you know, just from a physical standpoint, it begins to take a toll when you just get tired in the fourth quarter. And we've seen the Jets, a couple of weeks ago, they actually played the Patriots pretty well. You know, they took the game into the fourth quarter and they just wore down. And last week against Tennessee, they were leading, 16-0 at one point, and they were leading still going into the fourth quarter. And I think mentally they broke down. They just committed a barrage of stupid penalties. And, you know, I think mentally it takes a toll as well on the defense. So it's a team sport, and when one unit is so far behind the other, it definitely creates bad play and tension in the locker room.
On the defensive side of things, are there pieces the Jets are really happy with? Are there players that you look at and say, you know, these are going to be core players as they try and rebuild this team?
Yeah, I mean, they have a couple of players on defense. Jamal Adams is a star. I mean, he should be in the Pro Bowl. He's a safety / linebacker. I mean, he lines up everywhere. He's mostly in the box. He's a legitimate player. Other than that, you're hard pressed. Leonard Williams, who once we thought was going to be a star, is having kind of a disappointing year. Avery Williamson, their middle linebacker, is a good run stopper, a little vulnerable pass coverage, but he'll be around. So, they have maybe four or five guys on defense. You could say, well, we want to keep these guys and build around them. But really, on this team, they have only one blue chip player, and that's Jamal Adams.
And on the offense, I assume I was going to ask you this, Senator. The offense, you're expecting an overhaul in the offseason?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, there's really only two or three players I would say that are guaranteed roster spots going into next year. And, of course, one is Sam Darnold. The tight end, Chris Herndon, the rookie, is a good player. I think he has a chance to be really good. And their right tackle, Brandon Shell, who's an okay starter. But other than that, nobody else is nailed down to the floor. Everything could move out. You know, there's going to be a new coaching staff, in a few weeks. And so they'll have their own ideas on how to, what they want the team to look like. And so, there's just it's going to be a massive turnover on offense.
Yeah, I want to ask you about the coach before we let you go, Rich. Final thing on Bowles. I know the day they were getting blown out by, at that point, was what was an historically bad Bills offense. A lot of people were I was getting texts from Jets friends of mine that are like fans that are going like, hey, can we fire Bowles at halftime? Why, he's a goner, like a dead man walking, why did they just not make the move in season?
It's a great question, Howard. I think a lot of Jet fans are still wondering. I mean, he is a goner. I mean, as soon as the season's over, I think at this point they'll just wait till the end, because they had the perfect opportunity to do it after the Buffalo game, because they were going right into the bye week.
Right.
And, you talk to people there, and the way they saw it was, they have a lot of young players. They didn't want the trauma of changing coaches. They thought it would have a negative effect on the young players. The other thing is, this is not a dysfunctional team. I mean, like when the Giants fired McAdoo last year, they were just a dysfunctional team with all sorts of crap going on. And this year with the Browns, with Hugh Jackson, the Jets are not a dysfunctional team. They're a bad team, but there's no discord. They're a happy bad team, as it were. So they felt that Bowles, because he had maintained some chemistry in the locker room, they didn't want to disrupt that. And I think really the owner just didn't, they have a new CEO, Christopher Johnson. Mm-hmm. Woody Johnson is off in England as the ambassador. So Christopher's running things, and I don't think he wanted to be perceived as reactionary, because his older brother, Woody Johnson, has been very much a reactionary owner over the years, and he didn't want that same perception for him. So he decided to ride it out with Todd. But I think even some players were surprised that he wasn't dismissed after the Buffalo game.
Well, I think I saw a stat, maybe it was from you, Rich, that this is the first time in Jets history, and this is really going a ways, that they've had a coach have three straight nine-loss seasons.
Yeah, that's true. I did write that. Look, I mean, nothing will ever be as bad as the Rich Kotite era in 95 and 96. They went 4-28 2 years, so it's pretty tough to top that.
Yeah.
But this is right there, Howard. Mm. I mean, I like Todd Bowles. He's a really good guy. He really never shows his personality in public, but he does, when you talk to him alone, he does have a good personality, and unfortunately people never get to see it, but it's just been an utter and complete breakdown from personnel acquisitions to coaching to playing. It's just a mind-boggling series of events of just ineptitude, and the coach, of course, pays the price with his job.
Well, it's the Jets, Rich. You've been around long enough, so this is kind of standard operating procedure, unfortunately.
Yeah, it's like Groundhog Day, you know. Yep. It's just over and over again. And look, I think they'll keep the general manager and give Mike Maccagnan a chance to rebuild it again with another coaching staff. But, certainly it will be a new coach, at some point in January.
Thanks for giving us your time this morning, Rich. Appreciate it. Have yourself a nice weekend.
All right. Thanks, Howard. Take care.
That is Rich Cimini covering the Jets for ESPN.com. He's been on the beat for a long, long time and seen a lot of bad football. Joining us on the Wester Hotline, I'm telling you, it is. You look at this matchup, and you hear Rich talk about hearing what they're saying about the offense down there. It's exactly what we were doing in September and October. You know, the line isn't good. The running game's not consistent. It's not helping out the young quarterback. The weapons aren't. There's really nobody that scares you in terms of the weapons. I mean, Darnold had a nice chemistry going with Anunua. That's their leading receiver. I mean, Robbie Anderson can make some plays. Rich mentioned Chris Herndon, the tight end. He's actually third on this team in catches. Curse has been a disappointment. It is a mess. You know, three touchdowns in the last five games. They're near the bottom in almost all of the key offensive categories: total yards, pass average. Darnold leads the league in interceptions. They're second to last in first downs per game. They're dead last in third down efficiency. Their scoring is a little higher than the Bills, but that's from earlier this season. They're 26th. Their game against Tennessee was the first time in like 6 weeks they got more than 20 points, and they ended up blowing the lead, as Rich mentioned, and losing to the Titans. So I think, you know, we looked at the Bills' offense prior actually to the Jets game, you know, when Barkley and they put up 41, going, oh my Lord, this team can't even, can you get to 10? Like, it was a struggle to get, you know, two touchdowns in the same game. And now the Bills offense has gotten better. The Jets game, the Jags game, and to an extent the Miami game, although not points wise, the Jets offense is where the Bills were, where it's a struggle to do anything on offense. And it puts a lot of stress and a lot of pressure on the defense. And now they're not coming through. They're not that particularly strong right now in terms of stopping the run. They're not getting a pass rush. They went through a five-game drought without a takeaway, and then they got a pick six in the Titans game. So they got a lot of problems as they come to town to take on the Bills on Sunday. It is Football Friday, presented by Seneca Buffalo Creek Casino. Nothing else comes close, and brought to you by Tops Markets Grocery Delivery. Save $15 on your first order with promo code TOPSWGR. 7 a.m., our coverage begins on Sunday morning from... with Fantasy Breakfast from the stadium. We'll bring you game day at 8, countdown to kickoff at 10. It is a 1 o'clock matchup. Weather looks good, mostly sunny, low 30s, 10% chance of precipitation, winds 10 to 20 miles an hour. So, you know, December home game, right? You'll take that. Pulse game show to follow at Chope and the Bulldog, and then, of course, Nate Geary and the Overtime Show Sunday night at 6. When we get back, we will get you SCAF. Brayton will set us up for the other games going on Sunday. There are a number of intriguing, interesting key matchups on Sunday. We'll break it down in a moment on WGR.
Football!
Super, super, great, great American Football Friday frenzy.
So, I know the Bills and Jets are playing Sunday, but Brayton... Are there other games on Sunday?
Oh, there's plenty of other games.
No,
are you
kidding
me?
Okay, well, it's a good thing you have SCAF ready for
us.
Yeah,
let's run down through all the games that are going on this weekend. Starting with Packers-Falcons. Aaron Rodgers, the Packers, first game without Mike McCarthy in 13 some odd seasons, pretty much. Parts of 13 seasons. So what's been So what's it been like pretty much going through the last, you know, several days without Mike McCarthy as head coach? Here's Aaron Rodgers.
There's a lot of pride, you know, in the performance. That's first of all. But I think, you know, doing things the right way and playing for Joe and giving him the best opportunity moving forward is important to a lot of us. But, you know, 2006, we were 4-8 and finished out the season, win our last four, and kind of felt good about ourselves all offseason and moving into training camp, and then went 13-3 the next season. And obviously, we're, you know, one play away from the Super Bowl.
Interesting note is that the Packers are actually -5 in this game over Atlanta, as the Falcons are struggling on their own, but they're heading to Lambeau to take on Green Bay.
It was a nice thing the Packers did. I read this today. They fired Mike McCarthy on Sunday. That would not be the nice part. But they had him come back into the building. I guess he spoke to the coaches on Tuesday, and then they welcomed him back in the building to say goodbye to the players on Wednesday, which was and the players gave him a standing ovation. So, nice touch. Usually you get fired, and I think you're kicked out of the building, and that's it. They let him come back and say goodbye to everybody.
Panthers-Browns. This one taking place in Cleveland. Carolina's -2 in this game. Pretty much Cleveland is still alive. They're in the hunt category, quote-unquote. The Panthers need a win in order for them to keep pace in the NFC South. I just don't see them being a factor at all. This is a kind of a wash game. It's nothing.
Yeah,
else.
Other than watching Baker Mayfield, right? I'm not sure what else you'd have for this game. But it's always, anytime the rookie quarterbacks are playing, I think it's interesting to watch these guys play. And Mayfield's having the best year of the rookie quarterbacks.
Maybe one of the more interesting games of the week, the Ravens in Kansas City to face the Chiefs. Patrick Mahomes is already getting ready for that playoff atmosphere.
It does present a different challenge that you don't see every single week, but at the same time, you're ready for challenges like that. I mean, this is a top-rated defense in the league, and they're going to come with the physicality, and they're going to come, I mean, they're going to get in the playoffs, and so it's going to have that playoff atmosphere, and I'm excited to kind of be an Arrowhead and get a play against a good defense like this.
The Ravens, surprisingly enough, still in it in the NFC North. I mean, their defense has been great. Lamar Jackson has been okay, not great, though, but they're still winning football games, and Pittsburgh's been not great. Cleveland needs a miracle, and Cincinnati injuries have derailed them.
Yeah, and you know what? It's funny. With a tie, so that makes them a half game out, I guess, right? Because Pittsburgh is 7-4-1, and Baltimore 7-5. And Jackson's three straight wins have them in a playoff spot right now. Mm-hmm. And as you said, still alive for the division title.
-6.5 is the line in favor of Kansas City for this game.
Hey, maybe Kelvin Benjamin plays in this game, I should say, because he just signed. So I wonder if it's possible they'll have him ready to go and play on Sunday.
Just imagine, seconds left to go in the game.
Game-winning touchdown, Benjamin.
To Kelvin Benjamin.
And it's a contested catch on a red zone play.
Mm-hmm. Soak it in, Bills fans, if that happens. Mm-hmm. On to Miami, where the Patriots are in South Florida to face the Dolphins. Ryan Tannehill has had success against the Patriots in his career. 3 wins in South Florida in his career, but he knows very well, don't make dumb mistakes against the Patriots.
I think this team, more than any other team, they're not going to beat themselves. They're not going to give you cheap flags, cheap penalties, cheap anything, really. So you can't give them any. You have to play clean football, and everyone has to do their job.
Patriots are favored by -7.5.
If the Patriots win, it would be their 10th straight AFC East Division title.
Yeah. Yuck. Yeah. Let's see. Next up on the docket, Saints at Tampa Bay to face NFC South rival Tampa Bay. Drew Brees, they're looking to try and close out the NFC South in this one with a win and get back to the playoffs once again.
We control our destiny right now. We win this game, we win the division, and that's the first step, first goal that we set for ourselves this season to accomplish that, and then we'll worry about the next goal. You know, this division has been one where it's highly competitive, and each and every year it seems like there's a different team or sets of teams that are all fighting for it at the end, and then one of us gets it. That'd be a big first step is winning the division with a win this week.
Not highly competitive this year. As you mentioned,
nope.
The Saints clinched the division with a win or a Carolina loss to the Browns. No one's over 500 in that division other than the New Orleans Saints.
Tampa Bay's been playing better lately, but they're still not a good football team.
Yeah, I actually thought, you know what? I thought Jameis Winston had lost the job for good, and maybe they'd move on from him in the offseason. He's played a little bit better. They're sitting there at 5-7, so, you know, there might be big changes in the offseason in Tampa, but maybe Winston is playing himself back into the future role there.
For your betting people, New Orleans is 8.5 in this game, -8.5.
All right.
Giants, Redskins moving on without Alex Smith, whose career could be in jeopardy with his infection in his leg now. Also, Colt McCoy broke his leg last week, so now it's Mark Sanchez starting at quarterback.
We know what's at stake. We understand this division's really up for grabs. These next few games, especially the divisional games, carry a lot of weight. So our focus and our energy is about playing against the Giants. We moved on from that last one, and now we'll get a chance to get some reps and be ready to play.
The Redskins, who were thought to be, I mean, they were on top of the NFC East and thought that, oh, maybe they have a chance. I think the second that Alex Smith suffered that really gruesome leg injury, I think all those hopes pretty much just went right down the drain.
Yeah, and the sad thing is, if you look at it, that division is wide open. I mean, Dallas is 7-5, but Washington, without their starting quarterback and their losing streak, they're still one game out. And I know we're going to get to Philadelphia and Dallas. The Eagles are right there, one game out as well. So it's not like Dallas is running away with that division. They're going to, if they win it, they're going to win it by default.
Giants are -3.5 in this contest. Mm-hmm. On to Houston, where the Texans are home. They continue their winning ways. They're home to host the Colts. Deshaun Watson really wants to keep winning down in Houston.
I mean, if we got to air it out, we can air it out. If we need to be, you know, don't have to throw it out and be more balanced and put up points that way, regardless of the situation and what I have to do, you know, for that game for us to get the win, I'm cool with it.
Texans will clinch the AFC South with a win over the Colts. But they're thinking about bigger things, too. They're trying to stay in position for the two seed, assuming Kansas City doesn't fall apart. Right now, Houston and New England are both 9-3, but the Patriots have the head-to-head tiebreaker. So Houston hoping to beat out New England, get that first weekend off.
Man, for the Colts, that loss last week to 6-0 really kills
them. The Jaguars,
them.
Yeah.
Really kills them.
And they
them.
Were playing so well offensively.
Yeah.
Andrew Luck's comeback player of the year type of season. And they really showing some positive strides under Frank Reich, and then go into Jacksonville and get blanked and have just an ugly loss like that. But the good news is, you know, you look at the wild card race, they're right there. You know, Baltimore's got one of the spots at 7-5. Tennessee now, well, actually, LA's got the first spot. Then Baltimore at 7-5. So 6-6, Tennessee 7-6, they're all still in that race.
4 o'clock games now we go. Bengals, Chargers. This one is -14 in favor of the Chargers. As we mentioned, the Bengals are just ravished with injuries. The Chargers should roll. Should roll, we should say. Mind you, they are playing in StubHub Stadium, where most of the time it is the visiting fans that are there. But, you know, Chargers are good this year. I think they could legitimately challenge the Patriots and anyone else in the AFC to make the Super Bowl.
And the Chargers, I'm just checking the schedule. Did they play both their games against the Chiefs? No, they still have one left. They're one game behind Kansas City. The Chiefs are the next game. So after they play the Bengals, then they play Kansas City. So the Chargers still in, you know, alive that for that division title and maybe even the one seed. They lost to the Chiefs in week one. So anyway, trying to look a little bit ahead of the schedule. My bad. Go ahead.
Broncos at the 49ers. Denver -4 in this one. Denver's still alive in the playoff hunt. Yeah. They are in the hunt, but they're looking better recently. But it does hurt that they lost Emmanuel Sanders. So 49ers,
but they got Andre Holmes.
They do.
You don't. Okay.
No. All right. Here's a big interesting matchup for the NFC East. Cowboys at Eagles. Cowboys are -3.5 in this one. Ezekiel Elliott knows that, you know, they got to stay ahead in the NFC East.
All of these have a lot on the line, but, I mean, it's fun. I mean, division game, a big rival, it means a lot. So, I mean, we got to come out there and make sure we're ready and go out there and do our jobs.
If the Eagles win, a couple weeks ago, you might have written them off as toast. But if they win, they move into a tie with Dallas. They split the head-to-head. I'm going off memory here because I haven't had to worry about the divisional tiebreaker when it comes to the Bills in a long, long time. I believe it's division record after that, after head-to-head. If Philly wins on Sunday, they actually pull ahead of Dallas in terms of division record. So the Eagles still very much alive and can actually still pull out that division if they win on Sunday.
Steelers on the road to face the Raiders. They're -10 in this matchup against Oakland, but I don't know. This has the smell of a road Ben Roethlisberger game. It's just one of those instances where, yeah, Pittsburgh needs to win this game to stay ahead in the AFC North, and this just has that feeling where it's probably isn't going to be a good day for Ben Roethlisberger. Oakland's defense has been bad, but they're not terrible. I don't know. Maybe I'm just thinking too much.
I mean, Pittsburgh should win this game. I mean, they
should.
They escaped in Jacksonville. They kind of choked the game in, away in Denver. I think they should win this game on Sunday.
Lions, Cardinals. Lions are on the road, favored by 3 points. I don't know what to say about this game.
Yeah,
both teams are not playoff teams.
It is a game in the NFL on Sunday. There you go. You can go watch Josh Rosen. Although, boy, I think Christian Kirk went down this week with an injury.
Yep, he's done for the year.
Like four starters are down on the offensive line. It's a mess in Arizona.
They still have Josh Rosen, so they should be okay.
It's the only reason to watch that game.
Yeah. Sunday Night Football, Rams-Bears. I think this is the game of the week for sure. Mitch Trubisky looks like he's going to be back in the lineup with his shoulder injury, but, you know, they're going up against the Rams, who's a very good defense. The Bears with a win, I think, could potentially just set themselves over, you know, over the top of Minnesota.
If they get to 9-4, right, in Minnesota, if Minnesota loses 6-6-1, so the Bears...
Minnesota and Kirk Cousins they've been very inconsistent this season.
Yeah, the Bears, and now the Rams, they clinched their division already, but the Rams could clinch a first-round bye in the NFC playoffs if they beat Chicago on Sunday night. So still plenty for the Rams to play for.
And then, of course, Monday Night Football. Vikings are in Seattle to take on the Seahawks. Seahawks are -3 in this game, so they're actually the ones that are favored, I guess.
Yeah, they've made quite a push here. Yeah. They've won 3 straight. I thought they were dead and buried earlier this season.
Yeah.
But, you know, they find themselves now. I think they're in the top wild card. Yeah, so at 7-5, they're in the number one wild card spot. And they've got a good schedule down this stretch, these final four games. So I could see Seattle being favored over Minnesota in that one.
And that's Scaff for you.
We'll come back and close things out in a moment. Instigators coming up at the top of the hour on WGR.
Breaking sports news airs first here. Guaranteed. WGR Sports Radio 550. 2020 Sports.
Play in the show.
Notes for the road, if you're looking for some other things to do this weekend, Amerks are home tonight, 7 o'clock game against the Providence Bruins. UB takes their top 20 ranking, right, 17th, yes, to St. Bonaventure tomorrow, 4 o'clock. The Bulls are unbeaten. Bonas won 3 straight. And Army-Navy is tomorrow, if you're looking for something to watch. Sabres are playing at 1, you got that. Army-Navy at 3. The Black Knights trying to record their first ever back-to-back 10 win seasons and trying to extend their win streak to 3 over Navy while clinching the Commander-in-Chief trophy. Army-Navy games are fun to watch just for the pomp, the circumstance, and everything that's involved in that great rivalry. Everybody have yourselves a marvelous weekend. We will talk to you Sunday for Bill's pregame coverage. Instigators coming up next on WGR.